Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out there on the edge of the northern prairie. It's been cold out there, but it's a dry cold, you know, and so it's not painful or anything, and of course we are used to it. But the battle of the thermostat goes on in every household in Lake Wobegon. Fat people turn it up and skinny people turn it down. And between the husband and the wife and the children and the in-laws, it goes up and down and up and down and up and down, 68, 72, 65, 74, back and forth it goes. But smoke pouring out of the chimneys from all those houses where they have cut wood starting last spring for a man to look out his kitchen window and to see all that firewood stacked as high as a person can reach in two rows all the way back, 40 feet of it. This beautiful, beautiful firewood that you have cut yourself makes you feel like a rich person. And for the man to be able to bring his firewood into the house restores the ancient role of men, bringers of fire, providers, the chief woodcutter. Yes, whatever stupid things the man has done and crazy things and bicycles he's backed over in the driveway, nonetheless, he cut this with his own hands. And now on this cold, cold day, the smell of burning oak and pine and hickory from his chimney, he feels like a rich man. All those people selling firewood coming to your door, pickup trucks, wanting to sell you what they call a cord. That's not a cord. That's a quarter of a cord. That's a decorator cord. That's not a real cord of wood. They want to sell you a bunch of wood for $75, $100, $120. No, thank you. I did my own. I went out in my neighbor's woodlot, and I went out in my my uncle's farm, and I've been cutting wood all spring and all this summer. That's all mine out there. My chainsaw, my ambition, my arms. I did that. No cash whatsoever. Nobody showed me how to do it. I just always have known how to do it. That man sits down in his man cave. He sits down in the chair that is reserved for his use alone, in front of this blazing fire, having turned the thermostat down to 62. He sits in front of his fire, and he puts his feet up on his own personal coffee table, and he opens the newspaper. He doesn't mess around with the front page. He's solved all of that already. The debt limit and all of that, and global warming and Syria and Egypt and all of that. He's worked all of that out. He turns to the crossword, and because it is Saturday, this is the most difficult crossword of the week. He sits there basking in the heat from his own fire, and he looks at one down, and it's five letters, and the clue is ASU home, and something clicks in the hard drive, Tempe. Tempe, T-E-M-P-E, and one across is Concord Sage, Thoreau. He's gotten two clues in 10 seconds, sitting in front of a fire that he made from wood that he cut himself, and his wife, his beloved wife, brings him in a cup of coffee, and she looks at that crossword, and she says, I just can't believe that you work out the crossword in ink. Oh, he said, I've always worked out the crossword in ink. This man is sitting on top of the world, even though it is a cold day. Winter is not the problem. Life is the problem. And thank God for it. But you can't change your life by moving somewhere else. Even if you imagine that you can, you get there, and there you are. There you are. And you've got to deal with that all over again. Oh, Lake Wobegon is a strange place. We've been a major exporter of people for a long time. But it has its merits. I have to stand up for my people. They do their best. God knows. God's frozen people up there on the edge of the tundra. You stand, you can see all the way to the horizon. You stand on top of a tuna fish can, you can see way too far. Not good at telling each other things. Mavis went off to Los Angeles on her own hook, didn't tell anybody, to celebrate her 75th birthday. She went because she'd seen this workshop on batik, and she's been working in batik. And when she got to Los Angeles, she discovered that it was a whole weekend and you were doing nudes on batik. And so she sat in a studio with 15 other people, other women, looking at a naked man and trying to transfer that image onto cloth. She had not told anybody. She had not told Vern, the retired pastor down in Iowa, who she's been sort of seeing and who's been courting her now ever since Thanksgiving, though less and less obsessively the past few weeks, if the truth be told. And they talk every few days and they tell each other almost everything, but she did not tell him that she was going out to Los Angeles. He would have worried about her. And there she was in a hotel in Santa Monica and going downtown to the museum for the workshop, looking at a naked man and trying to put that onto this colored cloth. She didn't tell anybody. And when she got back to Lake Wobegon, nobody asked her where she had been. Nobody. She was waiting for it because now she wanted to tell them what she had done, and she wanted to describe this handsome young naked man and show people the batik that she had done, and nobody asked, and so being Lutheran and modest, she could not tell anybody. People walk around with these powerful, powerful secrets. Mr. Clint Bunsen, sitting in the Chatterbox Cafe, sitting in the cafe and eating the Salisbury steak and drinking his coffee, thinking about the Southwest, as he so often does. He was in the Navy in San Diego, and he wanted to settle out here. Arizona, New Mexico, somewhere out here. He loved the climate, but he made the mistake of coming back to Lake Wobegon to clean up his stuff. And his mother gave him such a hard time for even thinking about moving away. And then Irene, the girl that he'd been dating in high school, gave him a hard time because she had written him letters and he had written her only postcards. And everybody was on his case, and to show that he loved them and to prove to her that he loved her, he married her, which is not the right thing to do somehow. But now it's been 40 years. And it's not that he doesn't love her, he does love her, but with a certain ambivalence that you pick up after 40 years. Is ambivalence a bad thing? Well, yes and no. It all depends, I guess. But he sits there in the cafe and he regrets not having stayed out there in the Southwest. He doesn't dare go to Arizona for fear it would break his heart to see what he gave up all those years ago when he settled in to marry that woman just to show her that indeed he did love her. He wonders what he would have become if he'd moved out here. Well, he would have been the same person. I suppose people don't have that much capacity for change. Irene, getting ready for the bake-off at the Lutheran Church, she's won the prize 3 years in a row. And now she told him this year she's going to make apple spice dump cake. He said, "Why? Why?" he said. You're a pie baker. You make a pie, especially that banana cream, you're going to win again. Why not? You're good at that." Well, though she couldn't say it, the truth is that it would be uncomfortable for her to win this one more year. She is a Lutheran. These are modest people. Honorable mention is more than good enough. You give us a gold medal, we would have it bronzed so that you wouldn't think that we thought too much of ourselves. Now she's going to make apple spice dump cake, which looks like a cow pie turned upside down in a pan, just like her mother. Her mother was the most beautiful piano player in private, but when she played in church, there was no embellishment. She just played the chords so as not to show off whatsoever. These are my people. These are the people I grew up among, and I ought to take after them more than I do. Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.